that they begin the recording and broadcast.
Okay, so our recording has started. Welcome to our June 11th tick-back meeting. Let's just start off with perfunctories, and that would be a roll call. Mandy?
Judge Conklin?
I'm here.
Ms. Fleming?
I'm here.
Judge Barton?
Here.
Judge Buckley?
Here.
Judge Cope? Judge Fannin?
Here.
Judge Gabe?
Here.
Judge Heinrichs?
Here.
Judge Kelly?
Here.
Judge Marginis?
Here.
Judge Ryan?
Present.
Judge Thompson?
Present.
Ms. Bartleson?
Here.
Ms. Carter?
Here.
Ms. Eberhardt?
Here.
Mr. Finke?
Here.
Mr. Landry?
Here.
Mr. Planet?
Here.
Mr. Rule?
Here.
Mr. Taniguchi?
Here.
Mr. Taylor?
Here.
Ms. Turner? Ms. Turner? Mr. Yamasaki?
Here.
And advisory members, Mr. Wardlaw?
Yes, good morning, here.
And Mr. Theodorovich?
I am present, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, good morning all. So a couple things, just procedural matters. The first is the obvious. We're conducting this meeting much differently than we have any in-person meeting in the past, and that is that we're conducting via BlueJeans, which is in a very efficient platform, but it does have some parameters to it. One of those is, as you can tell, we can only see 9 screens at a time, which will candidly, I don't want it to detract, but it's going to, because one of the ways with our in-person meetings that's so efficient is we can all see each other and we can tell when folks want to make a comment. We don't have that luxury here. So with the help of Brandy and Rebecca, Rebecca and I will make every effort to acknowledge anybody who wants to make a comment, any committee member who wants to make a comment, but it's going to be a little cumbersome. So I just ask for your patience. And if you want to make a comment and you don't believe we've acknowledged you, don't be shy. That almost goes without saying, because I know all of you and I don't consider any of you shy. Additionally, I completely understand we're all facing challenges in our own home courts by the minute. Mr. Yamasaki just shared with us that he's got a security issue going on. Mike Planet just shared with us that everybody has issues. So I truly appreciate your time. I know you may need at moments to step off to address something that's very urgent, that's completely understandable. If any of members of the public are watching from the outside, I sure hope you understand that everybody you see on these screens are extremely busy. And while this meeting takes priority, other things may pop up that require their attention. Also, on that note, we are going to have to make some very difficult decisions today. Contrary to the past, when our difficult decisions have revolved around distributing funds to the plus, we are now going to have to discuss allocating significant cuts, and that won't be easy. This committee has worked successfully through struggles in the past, and I have every confidence we're going to successfully work through those struggles today. Our discussions are candid. I remind everybody that these are very public discussions as well. Our discussions have always been professional and always been through the lens of finding solutions that are best for the trial courts as a whole. And I have every confidence that we'll continue with those standards today. Given that, Rebecca and I have decided to slightly adjust the agenda, just because some of these items will put a different perspective on, or at least we want to make sure everybody has all the information necessary in conducting those. So once we get to the agenda items, we're going to start with a budget update from Zlatko, which is actually information item number 1. Then we're going to go through information item 3, which is mental health case weights. Then we're going to go to our action items in order, 1 through 8. So again, we'll take information item 1, information item 3, and then we'll go through all of our action items 1 through 8. And if we have time, we'll circle back to information items 2, 4, and 5. So let's again go through some procedures just to get those out of the way. I invite a motion to approve the minutes from the April 30th meeting, which is contained on page 5 of your material.
Bartleson move.
Martin is second. Martin is second.
Thank you. And I'm going to follow the same procedure we do, folks, today for our action items. And I'm simply going to ask if there's any folks that are voting in opposition, though we might have to take some roll call votes later. Any opposition to the motion to approve the minutes? Hearing no opposition, the minutes from the April 30th meeting are approved. The next item on our agenda is the written public comments. I want to clarify a few things here because I received some information that there might have been some concern about how public comments are posted. I remind everybody that written public comments are posted pursuant to approved policies, both from the Judicial Council, internal committees, and advisory committees. So written public comments are distributed to all members of the applicable committee. In this case, every member of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee has received the written public comments. As is consistent with every advisory committee, subcommittee, internal committee, and the council, however, written public comments are not posted publicly, not for any reason to try to not be transparent, but based upon the policy stated and legal opinion stated. With that being said, the committee received 3 public comments. They've all been distributed to you. The public comments were received, 1, on behalf of 29 trial courts. You all have those. It's contained in your materials. I'm not going to read off all 29, just in the interest of time. We also received a public comment from the Sacramento Superior Court and a public comment from the presiding judge and the CEO of the San Bernardino Superior Court. So all those public comments are provided in your materials. So with that, and before we start with the agenda items as outlined, any additional comments from anybody? Have I left anything out, Brandy?
No, thank you, Judge.
Great. So with that, we're going to start with each of our agenda items as noted. Rebecca, anything else you wanted to add?
No, thank you.
Great. Sorry to surprise you. So we're going to start again first with information item number 1, and that's Zlatko on the budget summary. Zlatko?
Great. Thank you, Judge Conklin, and thank you, members of the kickback. I just want to give you a brief update on where we are in terms of the budget. It's been quite a bit of news as of late. And I did want to just make a little run through between what was in the May revision and the differences with the current version of the legislative budget. That has been an agreement between the Senate and the Assembly. As it relates to the items that are before you, reductions are at a big difference between the governor and the legislature in the overall budget package, and no different than with us and the trial courts. The trial court budget reductions that you're considering today are in the $168 million. The legislative budget package considers a $76.8 million budget reduction, so substantially less. Another significant difference is that there's no budget year 21-22 increase in those reductions as compared to what was proposed in the governor's May revision. And so there's some substantial changes and differences between the budget amounts. $50 million for COVID backlog is still in the budget in both the governor's proposal and the legislature's version of the budget. That is, been a discussion item here, and the allocation of those funds, and it's the description there. It is for COVID backlog workload that's resulted in the court closures, the court slowdowns, and the like. $25 million for modernization is in the legislative budget, but a difference is that it's only funded for a 2-year basis, $25 million in each year. And while we appreciate that support, it's important to note the difference because of the different commitments that might be made. Additionally, there were some proposed reductions in programs like Dependency Council, Interpreters, Equal Access Fund that were in the May revision. They are not part of the legislative package. But with that, those differences are still being worked out. There's been news reports as of yesterday that the legislature will likely proceed with a vote on its budget version come the statutorily required date of June 15th, and will meet that obligation. The reports, however, that the negotiations will continue between the administration and the legislature to finalize something that there is a broad agreement on. And so that means that there's still uncertainty as to what level of reduction will be in the budget. We expect that there's something will be there. And so I think what's critical for today's work is that you do develop the methodology that is something that would be submitted to the council. So while the numbers may be in flux, I think that the critical work that's happening today is still necessary and appropriate for the methodologies. I think with that, I'll open up to questions if folks have anything in terms of status of budget and anything in particular that they'd like to talk about.
Ms. Lacco, could you just remind us of precise dates? You gave us the June 15th date, but working out from there through the actual budget.
So, of course, Judge. So, assuming that a budget will be passed by the legislature on June 15th, the governor has 12 days to act on that piece of legislation, either sign it, veto it in whole, or blue pencil veto line item certain expenditures at it that are allowed within the statutory construction. So, that's the standard date that we've been all enjoying over the past few years, in which the governor has been signing budgets no later than the 27th after receiving a budget on the 15th. This sort of goes back to some of the days where there were budgets that were passed and there were continued negotiations between the administration and the legislature. The discussions have been that there might be additional amendments that would come to the budget even before the 27th date, and there'd be some package of legislation that represents the budget. But June 15th is the date to pass by the legislature, and the governor has to June 27th to sign a veto or line item veto that budget. But there's going to be a lot of activity between now and those dates to see if something can be, a deal can be struck, and we will then know more precisely the actual reductions. I will say, though, that we've talked about this maybe in other calls, that the tax receipt tax process has been delayed, and therefore there's still some uncertainty about building budgets as we go through the summer, depending on the level of overall personal income taxes, sales taxes, corporate taxes that would be coming in the summer. Those may impact the overall budget picture, and so we have to keep our mind and eyes set to the, sort of over the summer. We've had the benefit of having fairly stable budgets, growing budgets, and a good economy, and so we haven't had to worry about additional budget changes coming in the summer for the branch. It is possible, given the economics and the situation with the revenues, that we might have to have some additional adjustments in the budget to maintain balance.
Great. So any other questions for Zlatko on the budget summary? Okay, apparently not, Zlatko. Thanks so much. Truly appreciate your update. So the next item we're moving to is information. Item number 3, Kristen Greenaway. Kristen, are you on the line?
Hi, Judge. I am. Can you hear me?
You bet. So this is the adjustment request process update on mental health case weights, and I'll turn it over to you, Kristen.
All right. Thank you. Good morning. So I'm Kristen Greenaway, a supervising analyst here at the Judicial Council of California. The purpose of this informational update is to inform this committee of the action taken by the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee on this item. The materials for this item are on page 93, it's information item 3. So on March 26, 2020, the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee voted to approve the use of an interim case weight to separately capture a subset of mental health workload related to certification hearings performed under Welfare and Institution Code 5250. This action was in response to an adjustment request proposal submitted jointly by the Superior Court of Los Angeles County and the Superior Court of San Diego County. The proposal was referred to WAC by this committee. The joint proposal seeks to capture workload that until fiscal year 18-19 was not reported as filings and therefore not captured in the workload models previously. This is workload that is RAS related and consistent with case processing activities that would be captured as part of the RAS model. If approved, the interim case weight of 48.5 will be applied to the 13 courts that reported these filings beginning in fiscal year 18-19, which is about 52,000 filings altogether, and will be reflected in the 2021 workload formula. And just as an important note, the 2021 allocations reflected in your materials have been computed with this workload included. Due to the timing of the meetings, the decision was made to reflect the proposed changes for this meeting. If approved, the interim case weight will be applied until the next RAS study update, scheduled in approximately 21-22, when the workload related to these filings can be more fully studied in the next RAS study update. Since some of the courts reported very few of these filings and the interim case weight itself is relatively low, as I mentioned, 48.5, only four courts will actually show an increase in their RAS full-time equivalents and corresponding increase in their workload formula. So as stated earlier, this is an informational update and no action is being requested from the committee at this time. This item will be presented for approval to the Judicial Council at its July business meeting. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kristen. Any questions for Kristen on this information item? Okay, hearing no questions, Kristen, thanks so much for that summary, much appreciated. So folks, we're gonna now move to our first action item on the agenda, and that is court-appointed dependency counsel allocations. Audrey, are you with us?
I'm on the line. Good morning.
Excellent. Thanks so much. I'll turn it over to
Audrey.
You.
Thank you. I'm Audrey Fancy, Principal Managing Attorney with the Center for Families, Children, and the Courts, and I'm joined by my colleague, Vida Terry, the Senior Analyst in the Court-Appointed Counsel Program. We are here today to request approval to bring fiscal year 2021 Court-Appointed Dependency Counsel allocations to the July Judicial Council meeting. The current annual budget for Court-Appointed Dependency Counsel is $156.7 million. Staff notes that the May revise includes these funds as subject to a 5% reduction, specifically $7.8 million, that would bring the available funds to $148.8 million. As Lotko just noted, that was not included in the legislative proposal. Judicial Council staff presents two allocations for approval and requests a directive to submit the allocations to the Council at its July meeting based on the funding level in the final 2021 Budget Act. Attachment 1A on page 12 of your PDF file would be the allocation of $156.7 million. And attachment 1B on page 13 of your file would be the allocation of 148.865 in the event of a 5% reduction. Allocations are based on the methodology adopted in April 2016 with the recommendations of the Small Court Dependency Workload Working Group incorporated as approved by the Council in January 2019. Key factors used in the allocation are, for each court, a three-year rolling average of original dependency filings, a three-year rolling average of the number of children in foster care, and the Bureau of Labor Statistics Governmental Salary Index average as modified for other Judicial Council budget allocations. Additionally, the allocation was adjusted to reduce the impact of the funding methodology on the 31 small courts meeting the definition. We would be happy to answer any questions or provide further information.
You're welcome. Audrey, so somebody's not muted, just who has conversation in the background. I appreciate that. And turning now back to Audrey, any questions at all for Audrey? This is an action item. The two specific recommendations are at page 9 of your material. So I'm going to first see if there's any follow-up questions for Audrey. Doesn't appear to be any. I'd invite a motion on the recommendation set forth at page 9. So again, this is both recommendations that are somewhat contingent upon the level of funding granted.
This is Kim Turner. I move approval.
All right.
David Yamasaki seconds.
All right. Moved and seconded that the two recommendations set forth at page 9 of your materials be approved. Any additional discussion or questions on these items? And so starting as our practice has been, is there any opposition to the motion to approve both recommendations as set forth on page 9 of the material? And I just want to be careful, this is a little different. Almost all of you are muted. So if I move forward in a way that doesn't recognize your comment, please remember you need to unmute. So I'm going to restate and make sure there's no opposition. Hearing no opposition, I'm going to deem the recommendations at page 9 of the material, 1 and 2, are unanimously approved by TICBAC. And Audrey, thank you so much for your presentation. It's appreciated.
Thank you.
All right. We're now moving to the fourth item on our agenda, which is really action item number 2. This is a review of general ledger accounts for inclusion in the workload formula. Leah, there you are. Welcome back. Thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Hi, Judge.
I'm going to turn it over to you.
Absolutely. Thank you. And I am referring to materials that are on page 14 of the packet that was sent out. So this is continuation of work that had been done last year to update some of the underpinnings of the workload formula, and specifically the accounts and the projects. Projects is another way of referring to accounts that are included in the branch's workload-based formula. So OE&E, again, stands for Operating Expenses and Equipment, and it represents non-personnel and non-benefit costs in the model. OE&E is calculated annually, and it draws on a set of account codes that were designated as part of the workload formula back in 2013. The work that's contained in this report represents the first time since 2013 that the underlying accounts were reviewed and confirmed as being part of the workload formula. Additionally, at that time, there were several OE&E accounts that were noted as pending or requiring further review, but no review had been conducted until now. So a comprehensive analysis and review was undertaken by a working group of FMS members and also drew on the expertise of a working group of court financial officers throughout the state. The first recommendation is that TICBAC approve the recommended designations on the OE&E accounts. And to note, the allocations that are in other parts of today's packet have been calculated on the basis of TICBAC approving this recommendation. In addition to OE&E, there were some additional recommendations stemming from the earlier general ledger account review, and they have been wrapped into this report. Recommendation 2 is a recommendation that the Court Executives Advisory Committee work together with Judicial Counsel to continue to standardize usage of the chart of accounts, and that these groups work together to periodically review the codes and accounts that are added and eliminated every year. So one of the things that the working group of court financial officers pointed out was that it was really difficult to evaluate some of the work because courts seem to be interpreting and using certain accounts in the same way, or I'm sorry, in different ways. And that would not preclude courts from continuing to categorize their funds in the way that they're accustomed to, but it would introduce standardization when possible. Additionally, there is a recommendation 3 asks that TICBAC approve recommendations on a few additional general ledger accounts that were not previously reviewed last year. These were accounts that were identified somewhat late in the process and have been given a review and designation by that small subcommittee of FMS and are put included in this report for approval. And finally, there is a recommendation that our branch accounting and procurement office create a new project code specifically to track the revenue associated with civil transcripts. Currently, there's a project that's used for transcripts, but it doesn't differentiate between criminal and civil. And so this will help create more consistency in how we review those accounts. So those are the recommendations, and I will take any questions at this time.
Leah, thank you so much. So again, folks, these recommendations are at page 16 of your material, set forth as 1 through 4. Before I invite a motion, obviously I'll ask if anybody has any questions of Leah or discussion comments. Okay, so I'll pause. There doesn't appear to be any questions for Leah or further discussion. So I'd invite, we can always break these up, but in the interest of efficiency, if nobody has a concern about considering them together, I'd invite a motion to consider recommendations 1, 2, 3, and 4 as summarized by Leah at page 16 of your material.
This is Sherry Carter. I make the motion to approve 1, 2, 3, and 4 on page 16.
Thanks, Sherry. And who made the second?
Bartleson.
All right. I heard Bartleson first, so Mike, we'll give you credit, but Kim Bartleson seconded. Okay. So there's a motion that's been seconded to approve the recommendations 1 through 4 as stated. Any further discussion on these items? Any opposition from any committee member to the motion to approve each 1 through 4 of the recommendations? Hearing no opposition, I'll deem recommendations 1 through 4 at page 16 of the material unanimously approved. Thank you so much, Leah. Much appreciated. And we're now going to move to the fifth topic of discussion, which is also an action item. And this takes us back to Kristen. Kristen, are you back with us?
I am back with you.
Thank you. This is the workload formula adjustment request process submitted by San Francisco concerning their cluster assignment. And it's set forth. This is item number 3, folks, set forth at page 31, beginning of your material. Kristen?
Great. Thank you so much. All right. So in January of this year, the Superior Court of San Francisco County submitted an adjustment request proposal seeking a revision to its existing cluster assignment from Cluster 4 to Cluster 3, and to make cluster reevaluation a regular part of the workload formula update process. The Funding Methodology Subcommittee discussed this proposal at its February 20th, 2020 meeting, and it is their recommendation that it is now before this committee. So as background, the current four-cluster model was developed for use in the resource assessment study in the early 2000s and is primarily based on authorized judicial positions. Cluster 1 is comprised of 2 judge courts, and the remaining 3 clusters were based on natural breaks in the data, grouping similarly sized courts together. San Francisco is currently grouped with Cluster 4. But please note, the change from Cluster 4 to Cluster 3 is currently reflected in your workload formula materials. Again, due to the timing of the meetings, the decision was made to run the models with San Francisco in Cluster 3. For the most part, authorized judicial positions have not changed significantly since 0405, when the cluster model was initially developed for RAS. Over this period, some courts have received new judgeships, as well as received authorization from the Judicial Council to either increase or decrease their subordinate judicial officers. But generally, if the clusters were developed today based on AJP, they would be grouped similarly. However, the Superior Court of San Francisco is the exception. San Francisco has experienced the most significant change, having eliminated 10 SJOs in 2014, 15% of the court's total AJP. For a visual, the cluster groupings can be seen on page 32 of your materials. Graph 1 at the bottom of the page shows the 2 years in comparison. 0405 data is on top, and 1920 data is on the bottom. And as you can see, in 0405, San Francisco had 65 AJP, which is the first bar on the graph that begins Cluster 4. But now in 1920, SF is at 55 AJP. So using current data and the same methodology for determining clusters, analytically based, the Superior Court of San Francisco County appears to be a better fit in Cluster 3. In terms of impact, clusters have an impact primarily on the RAS side of the model, specifically in how manager supervisors and program 90 FTEs are calculated. So if this change is approved, it will result in an increase of approximately 9 FTE for the court from 327 to 336, or a 3% change. And as noted, this change is already reflected in your materials. Should I go ahead and read the recommendation as they are?
Well, that's the recommendations are set out at page 34. They're rather lengthy. I think what I'd prefer, Kristen, is just if anybody has any questions. I do want to circle back just a little bit. As I understand it, these are, as you noted earlier, these are analytical decisions. So these are based upon numbers. These are not, sometimes as judges, we talk about discretionary decisions versus others. These are based upon static information, correct?
Yes, yes.
And also, this was submitted some time ago, correct? So San Francisco originally submitted this for prior meetings. We've just deferred it to this meeting.
Yeah, they submitted this at the beginning of the year.
Okay. So, and I thought I heard, now I'll open it up for questions and discussions. Is there a question?
So this is Sherry Carter. I was just going to say, I support the recommendations, so I'm not opposing them, but I do want to point out this is not objective criteria. This is another area within the formula that I think is very flawed that I know that we've committed to look at in the future. When you're looking at the impact, as Kristen mentioned, it primarily has to do with the supervisor management formulas that are used for staff on the RAS side. And when you do that, you are assuming that everyone is within one building. So in other words, when you're applying a formula to supervise and you're saying that the standard should be, you know, the span of control should be 12 to 1 or 8 to 1 based on the cluster, there is an assumption they're all in the same courthouse, which is not true for many courthouses. And so I want to point out that while I support the motion, I think the really important piece here is this is not subjective, this is or objective. This is a area that needs to be addressed, and I think it's on our to-do list. If not, it's on WAC's to-do list, I'm not sure. But it is an area that definitely needs to be reviewed and improved upon because it's faulty.
Great, there you are. By the way, Sherry, you've moved out of your camera frame, so we can't see you as you're, there you are. Great, thanks so much for that comment, understand that. Any additional, and that's a very legitimate concern, it's, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, Sherry, but you said you don't have any opposition, so are you making a motion to approve?
I will make the motion to approve it, certainly, but I think I'd like to hear from Kristen. Which committee has it on its agenda to review this area of the RAS formula? Is that the WAC committee?
This is, and it's part of the recommendation, this will go on the work plan of the FMS committee, so the funding methodology subcommittee.
Yeah, because as a reminder again, you know, these clusters were made way before my time with the state court. They were made back when I think Kim Turner and Mike Roddy were new to the system, or at least that's what they said. So it's been a long time, and they were created basically because there was no other way to do it. There's no rhyme or reason clusters. So I think we have a lot of work to do to improve the whole process. But that's the long way of saying I make the motion to approve San Francisco's, this recommendation, but we do need to include in that the review of this area.
Bartleson second.
Okay, so it's been moved and seconded. And Sherry, is your motion to approve all three recommendations at page 34 as a group?
Yeah, I am looking to make sure. I'm pretty sure it is. I'm sorry, I closed the page the minute I did that. I want to make absolutely certain.
Sure.
Yes. Reject the last item in the request. Sure. I think three is kind of redundant, but absolutely, I have no concern with any of them.
And Kim, that your second applies to all three? Great. She said yes. I saw it, even though she's muted.
I am unmute. Yes.
All right. So it's been moved and seconded that all three recommendations set forth at page 34 be approved. And Sherry, I'm not going to interpret your comment as a friendly amendment, but I think it's obviously noted in the minutes and is very appropriate that this will cause that additional work now to be considered by FMS, coincidentally, of which you're a member. So moved and seconded that the three recommendations set forth at page 34 be approved. Any further discussion? Hearing none, any opposition to the three recommendations at page 34? Hearing none, I'm going to deem the three recommendations at page 34 unanimously approved. I would note, because it was just brought up, by the way, the mention of the funding methodology subcommittee. It's chaired by Rebecca Fleming and Judge Buckley, who we both see their smiling faces, at least I do. A lot of work they have done relates to this and will relate to other items on our agenda today, so I'm just going to take a moment to acknowledge all that hard work and thank them, though the fun is just beginning. So I appreciate that very much. So that takes care of action item number three. So moving on to the sixth item of discussion, that's action item number four. It's starts at page 40 of your materials, folks. The recommendations for this action item are set forth, just so everybody can refer to those. Sorry. At the actual recommendations at page 43, but with that, Jason, have you joined us?
Yeah, I'm here. Can everybody hear me?
Sure can. All right, Jason, we'll turn it over to you. Thank you.
Okay, good morning. This is Jason Haas from Budget Services, and I'll be presenting action item number four for you. I'd like to begin by directing your attention to attachment 4A, which is page 44 of your materials. This attachment is broken down into sections to make it easier for you to view the current year as well as the proposed allocations for budget year of 2021. Column D represents the approved allocations for 1920. Column G is the requested allocations today for budget year of 2021. And columns H and I represent the dollar and percentage change respectively from 1920 to 2021. In summary, the requested allocation of about $54.5 million for 2021 is a decrease of about $25.6 million from 1920, and the decrease is primarily due to sunsetting BCP funding and program completion from prior years. Now, the COVID-19 crisis has created uncertainties related to the state budget process, and it is anticipated that modifications to the allocations may be necessary based on available state revenues and final budget decisions. The bottom portion of attachment 4A on page 45 is a summary of the total allocations requested by office. The total requested allocations for the 2021 fiscal year are $5.1 million for state operations and $49.4 million for local assistance, total of about $54.5 million. What we just gave you was detail and preparation for item number four, which starts on page 40 of your materials. And we're going to go office by office here. So starting with audit services, they request approximately $410,000, and this amount is unchanged from prior year. Branch accounting and procurement is requesting $151,500. This is an increase of about $13,000 from last year. The allocation is for staff that supports the procurement needs of the courts, and the increase is due to increased staffing costs. Business management services is requesting $8,500. Last year, we note that this allocation resided in budget services. The allocation is for travel-related expenses for the workload assessment advisory committee, and this amount is unchanged from last year. The Center for Families, Children, and Courts is requesting an allocation of about $6.9 million. This is an increase of $1 million from prior year. The majority of the increase is for the Shriver Civil Council, as there was a change to Code of Civil Procedure 384 in 1718, which diverted funds into the IMF, which was supposed to be for 1 year. The money has continued to flow in through 1920, so these funds are reserved within the IMF and can only be spent for this purpose. Therefore, the program is requesting an allocation to spend these reserve funds in the 2021 year. The CFCC program also absorbed the court interpreters testing and funding of $143,000 on an ongoing basis. That funding in prior years resided in the court operations services. Center for Judiciary Education and Research is requesting about $1.2 million, and this amount is unchanged from prior year. Budget Services is requesting $371,500. This is an increase of almost $14,000, and it's to fund increased staffing costs. Human Resources is requesting $22,700, and this represents no change from prior year. Information Technology is requesting approximately $43.3 million. This is a decrease of about $24.8 million, and as we noted earlier, the decrease is primarily due to sunsetting BCP funding and program completion from prior years. Legal Services Office is requesting approximately $2.1 million, which is a decrease of about $1.8 from prior year, and the reduction is primarily due to litigation that did not materialize that we had penciled in from last year. So that you can be assured that the IMF has sufficient funding to support the request, please see attachment 4C on page 48 of your materials, which is the IMF fund condition statement. Column D, row 26, represents the 1920 forecasted fund balance of $14.1 million, and column E, row 26, estimates an ending fund balance in 2021 of about $4.2 million. While the fund is estimated to remain solvent in 2021, further impacts to revenue are likely to occur. In addition, the May revision reduced general fund support to the IMF in 2021 by $7.8 million and this reduction increases to $9 million in 21-22 and is currently scheduled to be an ongoing reduction. Based on the current revenue estimates and the decrease in general fund support, an estimated $4.8 million expenditure reduction to programs would be necessary in the year 21-22, so a year after the allocations that we're looking at today. Going back to the item, the recommendation on page 43 is to approve the 2021 allocations from the IMF in the amount of $54,488,999. Due to the evolving COVID-19 crisis, final allocation amounts for 2021 will be based on available state revenues and final budget decisions. This concludes the presentation for item number four. We'd be happy to answer any questions, and in addition, we have representatives from each of the offices on the line as well.
So, Jason, I just wanted to clarify for everybody. So, I think we've modified our materials a little bit. The original recommendation was $65 million plus, and you're telling us now $54 million. Can you give us that exact dollar amount just so we all have it?
Yeah, so there was an error in the posted materials, which was my fault. So the amount hasn't really changed. The information was from a prior point in time. So the amount that we're looking to recommend today is $54,488,999.
Thank you. And I did just want to make sure all our math is right. So the recommendation, folks, as Jason noted, and Jason, thanks so much for that summary. It's that out of page 43, sorry. Of that amount, $54.4 million. Any discussion on this item for Jason?
Good morning, Judge Conklin. This is Chad Pinky. I have a question.
Go ahead, Chad.
Jason, on item attachment 4A, line 39, and I apologize if I missed this, but it appears to me that the litigation management program is being entirely defunded. I'm assuming that's not the case and that it's just being funded from somewhere else. Is that right?
That is correct. And again, the majority of the difference was the pending litigation we had penciled in from last year that didn't materialize. But yes, the difference between what we had penciled in for the litigation is being funded in a different program. We just didn't want to leave it out for anyone that may have noticed that it was there last year, but not this year.
Okay, thanks for the clarification.
This is Eric Profile from Legal Services. Jihad, just to clarify Jason's response, the litigation management program went through a BCP last year, so it hasn't been defunded. In fact, the funding has just changed now primarily from general funds.
So that footnote at the footnote at the bottom of attachment 4A, does that apply to line 39?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
It should, yes. The footnote is really regarding a litigation that we thought we had a judgment on that we were trying to satisfy. That judgment got vacated, so the money was set aside, and now it's been returned.
Okay. That's thank you.
So this is Kim Turner. I have a question, Judge Conklin.
Great. Go ahead, Kim.
So I noticed that the CCPOR program is requesting an increase of like 141% of the funding amount from this year, an additional $513,000. So can you tell me what the actual work will be there? Is it to add additional courts to CCPOR or upgrade the platform, or what is the use of those funds?
As we get there, if it's just we've got members listening in, could somebody define CCPOR just so everybody listening knows what you're referring to, Kim?
California Court Protective Order Registry. This is the online registry that law enforcement and the courts use to actually scan protective orders and make them available to cops on the street.
Thanks. Jason?
Actually, I'm going to defer. I'm hoping somebody from IT is on the line to answer that question for us.
Hi, this is Heather. I just joined from another meeting. I apologize. So we did look at submitting money for rewriting the application because it is going to be cloud and being modernized. I don't have the actual documentation in front of me, and I apologize for that because I just joined the meeting. So I'd have to go back and look. Maybe I can go do some research and then come back to you guys.
This is Sherry Carter. I'm going to say it that way. I think that's an important question because I would not have
agree to an increase to rewrite code when you still have courts that are not part of CCPOR. I would have quickly supported it if all 58 counties are brought up in CCPOR, because when we have statewide initiatives, every court should be entitled to be part of them. So I think that's an important thing for you to find out, Heather, because if it's to rewrite code for the courts that are on it, I think that can wait. If it's to bring everyone onto a statewide program, I think that has value.
No, I agree. Yeah, let me go back.
I agree with Sharon's comment.
So I just want to procedurally clarify this. So, Heather, how long do you think it'll take you to do that?
I am texting somebody right now to get information as we speak. So let me follow up with them and give me 5 to 10 minutes.
Okay, and as you're on here, by the way, I want to thank you. Heather and her team were the ones that made this Blue Jeans available today. Heather, thanks so much for all that work, and now we're burdening you even more. So
this is Kim, Judge Conklin. I have another question for Heather. If she could find out if this is being driven by the deployment of new case management system.
I don't believe that it is. That's what I want to find out, because I don't recall us taking that large of an increase when I listened to it. What was the exact amount of the increase? Because I don't have it in front of me at this very moment.
It's 513,323.
Judge Conklin, this is Chris Rill. I also note another CCPOR item on line 22 for CCPOR development, but that's a decrease. I don't know if the two are related.
It could be. Let me, like I said, I'm going to follow up right now with the program manager, and just give me like 5 minutes and I will get back to you guys.
So, okay. Judge Conklin, this is Sherry Carter. Judge, I co-chair the Revenue Expenditure Committee, and we had a meeting, I don't know, it feels like a lifetime ago, but it was probably 3 or 4 weeks ago, and there was, you know, I expressed concern in the couple of meetings that we've had leading up to this meeting today because of the budget that we're moving into next fiscal year and the year after, and potentially the year after that. One of the things that we really wanted was for the programs to come up to work on a plan with reductions, because we should not build programs next year that are either going to continue to cost the branch or that do not support the entire branch. I think, you know, operating as if life is normal next year is not what we should be doing. And so I personally have lived through going through the IMF and the trial court trust fund spending on behalf of the trial courts before, where we've had to make reductions. And it feels like we need to do some really deep diving again. So this is an example where we just can't spend money to build programs unless we see there's savings at the end or there's value at the end. So while I agree that we're trying to keep moving along, I will suggest that we have another review at the revenue expenditure level to really do a deep dive into the programs, because we need to understand a little bit more about where the funds are going.
So, Jason, what's the timing on this? Where does it go from here?
This would be going to the July Judicial Council meeting.
Right, that's
July
2024. So that's my concern. This is the last time we're meeting before then. So, Sherry, I understand your point. I think it's very valid. And I don't mean to say that we should put the need to expedite this above the need for efficiency. But was your suggestion that we defer this item until R&E can take a deeper dive?
No, I think we're going to have to approve it, but just put the programs on notice, which I had hoped we had done at the Revenue Expenditure Committee, where I had asked that the Judicial Council staff asked them, and Zlatko was part of that meeting, I think, and I think John too, where we have the program start looking at what a 5% and a 10% reduction would look like. Because if we run into tough times, I think the courts, if these are on behalf of the trial courts, we need to evaluate which of these programs makes sense to expand to contract, to continue with, or what. So I think we have to continue on, but just like the branch may have to, the governor may have to do mid-year adjustments, we may have to do the same.
That's an excellent point. I mean, the tighter the money gets, the tighter our examination becomes, so it's an excellent point.
This is Tim Turner again. I just wanted to echo kind of some of what Sherry's saying. Way back when we were in the deepest part of the last recession, I was on the IMF review group, I think it was called in those days, and we looked at the entire line by line, every program. And we found, you know, I mean, some of these things go on just from inattention. So I think when we actually focus attention on looking at what are these expenditures, what are we doing with this money, what's the strategic plan, we find that some of the things that are on this list are certainly defended anew so that we can decide whether or not with limited resources this is still the direction we want to go. So that was it was a painful process. I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago whenever we did it. But it was also a valuable process because I think we found a lot of things that were kind of, you know, last century technology that we decided to dispense with and, you know, programs that had just kind of moved along from benign neglect over the years. And so I really second Sherry's idea about looking at this entire program again before we have to look at funding it in the future. I realize we need to get something on the books today because the Judicial Council meeting is right around the corner.
Sure. Go ahead.
Oh, Jerry. I'm sorry. I would make the motion that we approve the recommendations with the understanding that there will be a and perhaps a mid-year adjustment, and so to let the program know to work towards potential cuts. So I know we have to make a recommendation, but there should be a caveat that it's also subject to review and mid-year cuts if necessary.
That's excellent. So I that would almost be a friendly amendment, and I think it's appropriate that if we approve this amount is approved contingent upon, as you two both just summarized, further examination and potential mid-year cuts.
And I would second Sherry's friendly amendment.
So, Sherry, are you moving to – go ahead, Nancy.
Although there's a second on the motion, I'd like to add that as we're reviewing this, just to kind of specify that CDGR does have the same allocation as last year, and I know with travel restrictions and a different way of doing our training that it would seem to me that we could also take a look there and find some savings.
Well,
coincidentally,
we have the chairs.
Yeah, so we would move line by line, Nancy, like we did in the Great Recession. So,
right.
Absolutely.
So we have,
good example.
Coincidentally, we have the chair of CDGR with us, Judge Gabe, and I'm sure she's taking notes and we'll address that. We don't need to address it today, but I think what we're all getting at is we're going to go line by line through this for necessity to treat everybody fairly. As Kim Turner just noted, and Sherry, we have to. But I want to clarify, so Sherry and Kim, is your motion to approve the $54.4 million? We've got Heather doing some background work right now. Is your motion to approve the amount as stated? There's Heather. Go ahead, Heather.
So I did get follow-up. So the reason why there's additional monies added just for this year is as you are aware, we are downturning the CCTC, which we hope and anticipate there will be some savings in 2 years in the shared services line item. This is actually to move the CCPOR application to the cloud in our new hybrid cloud data center. So you have to do some initial investment, but what we are anticipating is that we will see long-term savings. We will know more what those savings look like towards the end of the year. We're doing an RFP right now so that all of our services that we currently get provided by SAIC and the tech center, we will have real numbers that I actually wanted to come back and present to you guys what they will look like for year one, year two, as we roll off of the tech center completely with the SAIC contract. So our goal is to actually try to come up with long-term savings that we currently have allocated to the IMF. So that's been my strategy as we've gone through this procurement, but we needed the initial investment to move CCPOR from the tech center into the new cloud-based Azure or AWS, our hybrid cloud data center.
Sherry, does that answer part of your concern?
Yes, and I would say it this way, that I would make the motion that we approve the recommendation at the level presented, but to put the programs on notice, not to proceed in spending money until we have an opportunity to review line by line what they're for and whether or not this is the period that we need to make improvements, adjustments, or changes. So that way, we're not holding anything up, but we are have an opportunity to review them as we move forward before we get too deep into obligating money.
So, Sherry, your specific language was to tell them not to spend the money, which might be difficult. Did you mean to say tell them as they spend the money to be cognizant of the fact that this money may be reduced upon further examination? I don't know if we can tell
you
them not to spend
the
money.
You can do that. The problem is yes, that's a good way to say it, but if they obligate all the money and sign a contract and rush and do that in August, then the problem's going to be they're now in the middle of a contract. So I think that we just need to let the programs know to be careful about obligating the funds, because we'll have to potentially look at a mid-year adjustment.
All right, I think that's a good way to state it. So with that and with that friendly amendment, further discussion?
Judge Conklin, this is Jason Haas.
Go ahead, Jason.
I just wanted to add in that the draft item we sent to the Judicial Council for the July item does contain language similar to what Sherry just said, which was based on our prior R&E meeting. We had a phone call we had with them a couple weeks ago that essentially tells programs to look at their programs and be prepared for a possible mid-year allocation reduction.
Sherry, does that sort of echo your friendly amendment?
Yes, it's perfect. Thank
Great.
You.
I like perfection. Okay. So moved now, as I understand it, Kim Turner, you seconded, right?
I did.
Kim moved and seconded that the language is set forth on page 43 with the amount of $54,488,999 be approved, with the additional friendly amendment as just stated by Sherry and clarified that Jason has noted is moving forward in any case. Any further discussion on that, on the recommendation? And as stated with the amendment, is there any opposition to the recommendation set forth on page 43 with the friendly amendment? Hearing none, the recommendation set forth at page 43 with the friendly amendment of the unanimously approved. Jason, thanks so much. Okay, that was action item number 4, and that moves us now to our 7th item, which is action item number 5. So this is consideration of recommendations from the R&E regarding allocations from the TCTF, and I believe that's also from FMS regarding one-time funding. So this is coming to us from two different subcommittees of TCBAC. Oksana is going to present on this. A couple points of clarification that Rebecca and I wanted to make as we engage in this discussion. And Canada, we all know this is the discussion that may take the most of our time today. We have plenty of time for this. What we feel is most appropriate here on this approach is that we handle these recommendations separately. As listed, this starts on page 49 of your material. The recommendations are set forth at page 50 of your material, and that we take the cut, the $168 million cut, separately and initially in our discussion, and we move through that and come up with whatever other recommendation the committee finds most appropriate, and then we move to the $50 million allocation, as Lotko has stated to us, quoting the budget language, a $50 million one-time allocation for COVID workload backlog. So we'll start with the 168.9. We'll then move, after consideration and resolution of that, we'll then move to the $50 million. And then finally, we'll hear from some minor items regarding recommendations related to general fund allocations. Rebecca, is there anything you wanted to add to that as we start our discussion?
No, thank you, Judge.
Great. Oksana, are you with us?
Yes.
Great. So you understand where we're going. We're going to start with the 168. So we'll if you could present on the 168 first, and after we work through that, we'll come back to you for the 50. Go ahead.
Thank you, Judge. Good morning, everyone. This is Oksana Tak, Senior Budget Analyst with Budget Services. To address a projected $54.3 billion budget gap due to the COVID-19 pandemic and subsequent recession, the 2020-21 May revision reflects budget reductions throughout state government, including all entities within the judicial branch. Specifically, the May revision includes $178.1 million general fund reduction to the trial courts for 2020-21 based on a 10% reduction to base operations funding. Of this amount, $168.9 million reflects a reduction to trial court operations. During the Funding Methodology Subcommittee meeting on June 2, 2020, several reduction allocation methodology options were discussed. The subcommittee is recommending to the TIGBEC a pro rata reduction that keeps base funding floors funded at the current Judicial Council approved amount of $800,000 and apportions the $168.9 million reduction to all other courts using a pro rata method based on their 2020-21 workload allocation, including the Cluster 1 courts. This results in allocation reduction of 8% to the 56 courts. In addition to the budget year reductions, the May revision also proposes an additional $28.1 million general fund reduction for fiscal year 2021-22, based on a 5% reduction to base operations funding, of which $26.7 million impacts trial court allocations. The committee elected to defer a recommendation on allocation methodology for this reduction to the 2020-21 fiscal year. The committee's recommendation today will be presented to the Judicial Council for approval during its scheduled business meeting in July. That concludes the first part of our presentation. Budget Services Management is available to assist in answering any questions.
All right, and I'll remind all committee members that this is where we received our public comment. You all have those, and I'm referring you to those. I'm sure you've all read through them. And with that, Rebecca, unless you have anything to add, we'll begin the discussion again on the $168 million, the allocation of the cut, which is what we're ultimately deciding today. Rebecca, did you have a comment?
Nothing to add right now.
Okay. Well, come on, there's got to be somebody who's going to start this.
Judge Conklin, this is David. I'd be happy to.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it.
So, you know, one of the things that I guess looking back at some of the challenges that we face as a branch, one of the things that, you know, I'm very proud to have been a part of is the funding methodology that was developed to try to look at all of the courts and try to strengthen the funding approach to leveling the playing field for that matter. And I think a lot of progress has been made in that regard. I did have a chance to review some of the information that was submitted relative to this particular item, and I offer a couple of observations. The first is that I was among the group that was took up the issue in the Funding Methodology Subcommittee that advocated for the pro rata distribution of the reductions, and essentially that means that all of the courts would be subject to a portion of the $169 million that we're looking at in the area of a reduction. And that was not necessarily favorable to Orange, but it was very much consistent in my view with the strategies that we try to lift all the boats the same, and as we take hits, we try to approach that somewhat in a fair manner. Now, one of the realities of what has happened with the new funding methodology is that we have seen courts go from funding below the statewide average to go to funding above the statewide average. And I'll use one court as an example. Kern historically has been a woefully underfunded court. It now stands at a funding level in excess of the statewide average. If we were to move forward with apportioning reductions to courts, and I think there's a variety of different options that are brought forth, by giving courts above the statewide average a larger portion of reductions, courts like Kern would fall back below the statewide average, which does exactly what I think we are trying to avoid. If we want to maintain the status quo, hold the position of all of the courts that have made progress in funding, the only way to maintain the position of each court is basically to apportion a pro rata reduction against everybody. All of us have been very much challenged by the COVID crisis. We're obviously having to make very hard decisions, both in the prior item that we had taken up. None of these decisions are going to be easy, but I think if we look at it as a pro rata reduction, we essentially freeze everybody's spot of where they are. But if we start tinkering with some courts to get a larger percentage of the reduction, we move everybody across the board. And so I think that we should look at this as one-time reduction. During the creation of the funding methodology, we always talked about how monies would be distributed coming in. If it's a flat funding year, this is how it would be handled in a particular way. It was a very difficult topic for us to broach, and I think we kicked the can down the road. The can is now in front of our house, and we have to make decisions. And I think the appropriate decision in this manner should be for the reduction to be applied consistent with the funding methodology subcommittee's recommendation, and that is a pro rata reduction to all of the courts to absorb or to take the reduction of the $169 million. And that's the approach that I would be supporting today.
All right, thanks, David. I just wanted, and I'm not trying to stop anybody else from commenting, two things. One, Judge Buckley and Rebecca Fleming were the co-chairs of FMS. This was a vibrant discussion in their committee. I thank their committee for that work. They're obviously here and can add anything they want. Also, and Brandy, I want to make sure I'm right on this, page 56, 57, and 58, that massive column chart that you all have is the one that summarizes the ultimate outcome should this recommendation be approved, correct? So when David's talking about looking at different courts, those are the numbers that are set forth right now with the proposed recommendation from FMS or not. Is that Judge
that
Buckley?
Is correct, Judge.
Okay. All right. Additional discussion.
This is
Sherry Carter. I'm sorry. If someone else went, I'll let them go first.
This is Sean Landry. To me, the pro rata reduction does not seem consistent with prior discussions and Judicial Council policy when we're talking about equity. And from what I recall a couple of years ago, when we were looking at reductions, there should have been special consideration towards those courts that were below the statewide average. And that's been reinforced, I know, in other arenas too, and by the LAO's office and in some of their comments. I think we ought to be consistent in what we've been trying to do over the past decade, which is provide additional equity to courts that are below the average. And there may be other ways to do it besides a 50-50 approach. There may be ways to look at that in a more consistent manner than just a straight pro rata. I think it is contrary to what we've been trying to do over the past decade.
So I do want to just, again, the language that both David and Sean, so you all, I think the majority of the folks were here when we developed the original methodology, the second or third iteration of the methodology. We had allocations for good years. We had allocations for flat years, as I described them. The language that is in the policy is as follows, and I'm doing my best to read it word for word. Allocations in fiscal years for which a budget reduction must be implemented. Because future budget reductions cannot be predicted, the Funding Methodology Subcommittee recommended and TCBAC unanimously approved, and therefore the, and ultimately the Council approved, that they will be addressed as needed, with special consideration towards those courts below the statewide average funding ratio. So that's the language out of the ultimate act that was approved. And Sherry, I think you were next up. Again, I'm doing my best, folks, to watch. It's hard for me to tell. And Sherry, your voice was the last one I heard.
It was, but I don't mind deferring to anyone else.
Oh, no, please, go ahead.
Okay, well, so I'm a member of the FMS, too, and I also supported the pro rata approach at the time because it was my goal as a member of the branch is to support the branch, and it felt like that we needed to find a way to join together to understand that this budget cut is going to be difficult. But I reviewed the letters that were submitted. I support the letters that were submitted, although I did not see San Bernardino, so sorry, Nancy, I don't know why I didn't get it. But
it is in the attachment, so it was all set. So
yeah,
go ahead,
okay.
Sherry.
So, you know, I played around with the numbers. I wish I would have had a weekend to actually play on it, but I didn't. And because our formula in allocation has recognized a band, I played around with a few minutes that I had this morning to say, okay, if we had a band here where people within the band hit the average reduction, the pro rata reduction, and those above the band and below the band would take more if they're higher and less if they're lower, what would it look like? And it was interesting, and I'm not sure that helpful, but, you know, I am, and I'll tell you what I found. So I used how many counties were above 79. So the new workload formula percentage of need is 74.2%. So I thought how many courts were above 79% and how many courts were below 70%. So that was almost, you know, 4.5 or so points on each side. There were 24 above. There were 24 that were above 79, but all 15 of the cluster one fall into that category. So I'm not sure that would be fair because they have unique challenges in covering their workload. So if you took the 15 out, there's 9. How many courts are below 70? There's 7. So my quick band may not be the right band, but it does feel as if we have an opportunity as a branch to not only make sure that we're all part of the difficult year we're going into, year or two that we're going into, by all taking a reduction, because I think we all do need to take a reduction. But it also perhaps gives us an opportunity to stay committed to equity and funding like we have been trying to do for so many years. So I don't have the answer today because we're moving quickly, but I would personally be supportive of a process that would find a band that we would create the pro rata as the average. And for those courts that are within the band, that's what they take. But the farther you move away from the band, there might be, even if it's just 1% on each side of that, where it would be a 1% more and a 1% less, it recognizes our goal of equity and funding, because no matter how you look at the chart, there's still a lot of issues that we have not arrived at as of today in equity and funding, which has really always been our principle. So those are my thoughts, and I would, you know, open it up to others, but it feels like we do have an opportunity to support all of our principles, and it doesn't even have to be that big of a difference, but it feels like we should do something.
So Sherry, that's excellent, and I'm just trying to rephrase your comments without changing them, obviously. Was your suggestion that we start with a pro rata approach, but we put band limitations on the edges of that pro rata, so those courts, as I think you described, above and below, have a limitation within the amount that they'll be moved? Is there a better way to state that than I just did?
Well, a limitation on the bottom. So if there's a band, so if there's 58 of us and the band is 5%, 6%, I actually looked at 9, which I think might be too broad, but whatever the band is, if you're within the band, you take the average pro rata reduction. But if you're above the band, maybe it's 1% more. And if you're below the lower band, because you are truly, significantly underfunded, you might be 1% less. So that way we're not doing all of these adjustments, and that's why we created the bands in the first place. It's because, remember, there's two pieces of this. There's the workload adjustments, and that's why the bands were created. So we don't have these huge fluctuations. The bands help us with workload move within the band based on, minor workload adjustments because we use your averages. So it feels like, to me, we have an opportunity to recognize, there were 29 courts in the one letter. There was Sacramento, there was San Bernardino. There's a large chunk of our branch family that do not support pro rata, and I think we need to recognize that. And so if there's a way to do it where we can establish the pro rata within the band and then adjust it above the band and below the band, recognizing our commitment to equity and funding, I would be more in favor of doing something like that. I just personally didn't have time because I worked on that this morning early. It feels like a better commitment to what we've been trying to work on without the negative impact that David mentioned about flipping courts. That's not what we want to do, and that's what the bands would help protect against.
All right, so let's continue this. I'm going to mute my microphone only because I smell smoke, and I just want to make sure everything's okay, but please keep talking.
Go ahead.
So this is Judge Heinrichs, and I am not a numbers person at all, but I do agree with Sherry that there needs to be some recognition of the policies that this committee's been working really hard to support, so it doesn't feel like it felt years ago that that basically there was not a recognition. I think that as the chair of the Presiding Judges Advisory Committee, there's been a lot of unifying work that's been done. And I think that as long as that what the top looks like, those above the band isn't so much, because consistency and planning is critical to all the courts, but a recognition of what we've been trying to do, I think would be a very positive thing. So I don't know where the numbers are at all, because like I said, I am not that. I wouldn't want it to be so disparate that that it caused kind of other backlash issues, but I think the recognition of what we've been doing all along is important to have this be really supported branch-wide, because I think we've made lots of progress, and I wouldn't want to have us go back to those days where we were fighting amongst ourselves. I think that's very counterproductive, and want to keep us moving forward.
This is Nancy and Nancy Everhart from San Bernardino, and I echo both Judge Heinrichs and Sherry Carter in that whatever we do, we need to make sure that we're doing it in a unified fashion. We've come so far, and we've taken the time in the past to set up policies and principles and measures so that in times like this, we have those to reflect back on. Although I'm not necessarily in favor of the pro rata that came out of the FMS recommendation, I am recognizing the fact that if we do either pro rata or if we do it by our old methodology, someone will be hurt significantly. There will be courts hurt more significantly on either one of those. So I agree with Sherry Carter in that we need to come up with something that, although it is painful for all of us, is in a way that reflects the past policies that we have put in place, the things that we believe in, and those principles that we have held to during times of good and of flat times. So I would say that what Sherry was proposing sounds good to me. I also would like to indicate that I think a methodology where there's some sort of a, let's say, 80% reduction for all courts across the board, and then another 20 for those above the band, something like that, where it's not so impactful for those who still need to take reductions that but are traditionally a little bit better funded. I think pro rata it just doesn't reflect our current policies. Thank you.
So Sherry, I don't mean to be taking this all over, but Sherry, could I just try to put a little bit more structure? So do I understand yours to be pro rata, and then the 1% above and the 1% below? And if the math doesn't work, does it then all flow back into those within the band to absorb the additional cut?
Well, and that's, of course, it all comes down to the math, which is why I wish I had a weekend where I could have worked on this, but I didn't. So it all comes down to how to work the math, and I think we also have to recognize the cluster one courts and some of the challenges they may have in their position relative to the average funding line. So, there's some complexities, but the bottom line is the pro rata cut would be within the band. The question is, what is the band? I use 9%. Maybe it should be 7%. Maybe it should be 7% and small and cluster ones get no more than 1% above that or some. I'm making this up because I haven't done the math, but we have really smart analysts that work at the Judicial Council that probably use the methodology they've already developed. They've got an algorithm already that is for allocating new money to courts below the average that takes into account the proximity from the line as well as workload. They could perhaps use that algorithm and play with some numbers here going in both directions. So the courts within the band would take the pro rata cut, and then it would graduate above and below, and we'd need to set a maximum at the top for all of the reasons that we've also been committed to, which is stability in funding and providing opportunities for courts that need to look at those adjustments. I recognize that too. That's why this has been so difficult and we had more time to talk about it. But so I'm sorry I'm not being as succinct as I usually am, Judge Conklin. It's because I just haven't had time to come up with a specific formula, but it would be a band to be determined. 9% may be too much. It might be smaller than that. Or maybe 9 or maybe 10 is the right percentage. We need to talk about cluster ones, and then we would eliminate floor courts completely because, we already recognize they need that money to keep their court open. But as they go above the band, I would love to see it capped at maybe 1% more. It's not so much that it should significantly be a problem, but it is a tip of the hat that we're working towards equity and funding, and that funding would then go down to the ones below the band. And so maybe the amount to the below the band would be based on the amount to the 1% above the band, and we might even have to accept that. But at least it keeps us moving and shows to the legislature and to the branch that we remain committed to equity and funding.
So Sherry, when you talk about the band and the 10%, and again, I just want to make sure everybody understands, if we have an actual precise average funding level, if we use the 10% as an example, anybody 5% above that and 5% below that would be within the band. Is that what you mean to say?
Yes.
Okay,
and that
thank
might
you.
Be too broad. I'm suggesting that might be too broad. I used 9, and even that felt too broad. And that's where I think we would have to have analysts run to see. Sometimes when you run numbers, there's a clear cutoff that I don't know because I haven't run any of this. So, but yes, that is what I'm talking about. Is you have to figure out what is the cut, the pro rata cut, apply that to the band, eliminate floor courts, figure out about cluster one courts, and then 1% more above, and apply that money to those below.
So this is Kim, Judge Conklin. If Sherry's done, Sherry, are you yielding?
I am so yielding because I don't know if I've been very succinct in what I'm trying to explain.
So first of all, I am not on FMS, and I wasn't able to listen in on their meeting last week, but I did review their materials. And I think that I'm glad that we're having this discussion, because I think that the options that were offered at FMS were this 50-50, 70-30, 80-20. I can't remember all the various iterations. But I think that may have been one of the reasons that FMS ended up, you know, where it did, because none of those were completely satisfactory. So I actually do like this idea that Sherry has just Sherry, you are one brilliant woman. You just invented a whole different way, a different lens through which we can look at this. And I think we do have to acknowledge not just the spirit of what the branch has been trying to accomplish over the last 10 years, but I appreciate, Judge Conklin, that you read the language to us about, you know, what we do in times of reductions, that we would address them as needed. And I think we have to address them using, again, kind of our core principles. So I don't know what the number is, and I don't know what the band dimensions look like. I am hoping that the analysts who are listening in here have already pulled up that spreadsheet and are trying on a couple of different scenarios. I'm not sure that we'll have that today, but I like the idea of the people or the courts above whatever the band, you know, parameters are, giving a little more, and the courts below those band parameters getting a little more. Because I think that really, really recognizes the spirit of, you know, of what we've been trying to do to create equity across the decades for the courts.
So Kim Turner, when you talk about those above, actually they're taking a greater cut, and those below are taking a lesser cut. Correct.
Yeah, and I don't think we need to you know, I think one of the constraints at the FMS meeting was that those cuts were sort of identified as option one, option two, option three, option four, and perhaps those particular options were too, you know, were too drastic, were too alarming, and folks couldn't get there. But I think if we have a more nuanced approach to the methodology of how we're going to actually distribute the pain, that we can perhaps find, and like Sherry says, when you run the numbers, when you actually crunch the numbers, sometimes things come out that just surprise you and make you see, oh, this seems like a natural path. So I'm hoping that we have the option to look at that as an alternative to either pro rata or one of those other options that were discarded at FMS. I think that this is a better approach.
I heard somebody else make it. Was that you, Chad?
Yeah, I'll be very quick. I just wanted to say, you know, I think I would have trouble supporting the recommendation of the straight pro rata, because, I mean, as Sean said, and as a lot of the commentators who wrote in have said, the straight pro rata doesn't seem to give the quote special consideration towards courts below the statewide average, which we, you know, we all sort of committed we were going to do. So it's hard for me to square that. I like Sherry's idea, because I, you know, I'm sort of trying in my mind to balance that need for special consideration against the the first principle of the workload formula, which is to minimize volatility. And as Kim just pointed out, with some of the, I'm not on FMS, but I listened to the meeting, and with some of the options they considered, you know, there was extreme volatility. So I like the idea, you know, if there's a band and then people outside the band are taking more of a cut, but that it's a capped cut, that seems to be a pretty good way of balancing the sort of the seven principles plus that acknowledgement that any cut needs to give special consideration. And I am utterly unable to do math on the fly, so I don't opine as to anything having to do with the size of the band or anything like that.
Thanks, Chad. So who was next?
Judge Thompson. And ahead, Judge Barton after that.
Okay, so Judge Thompson, then Judge Barton, and then we'll keep going. Scott?
Thank you. I think Mr. Yamasaki pointed this out, but the concern, I was on FMS, and am on FMS. The concern that was raised, and we briefly touched upon a band, we briefly touched about a lower reduction to the cluster one courts, really didn't have a lot of the numbers. And there was a concern that by utilizing the band and or the 60-40-70-30 approach, you were going to have courts that were above the band dropping below courts that were below the band. So that there was just this overwhelming shift in what had been the order that had been developed to achieve and bring up courts over time. Which seemed inappropriate. I will throw out something else. I mean, I don't know which states are above, but I recall that there are states that are above 100% funding. Counties that are above 100% funding. I think that flies right at first blush in the face of the legislature and those saying that that should even be allowed to exist. And I know when there was funding in future years, we had addressed a policy to address that. We just didn't address it when there was a lack of funding and whether or not that should be a starting point for those courts or whether or not those courts should be perhaps brought down to the 100% and utilize those funds as a premise for special consideration to courts below the band. Don't know how much money is even involved in that. It's just throwing it out there.
So Sherry, before I go to you, I'm going to go to Judge Barton. Judge Barton?
Okay, I just wanted to point out that I think we need to step back for a moment and take a look at the fact that we're in an era or a time of considerable uncertainty. And we have no idea if the numbers we're assuming today will in fact be the numbers that are going to be in effect come August for the state. And we have no idea what the long-term impact is going to be into the next fiscal year. For those reasons, I think trying to develop an alternate approach to the pro rata reduction for this year while this process goes through is not appropriate. Second, there's not enough workup on Sherry's idea, and I understand this matter needs to get to the council. And I think it would be more appropriate to look at these issues for the next fiscal year once we're through this crisis and see where we are. As I indicated, over the last few years, I think the branch has fulfilled its commitment of equalizing the funding. And to make drastic changes this year during this period of uncertainty, I think is not appropriate. So I would support the proposal.
Judge Conklin, this is David. If I can just get in line again as well.
Great. So we'll go to Sherry and then David. Sherry?
Oh, I was just going to address the judge who mentioned that we didn't talk about bands at FMS. We talked about the average funding line. And you're right, though. Even in this proposal, it might take someone above the band into the band, but that's okay because the band is broad enough that anyone within that band is going to have a different position. The other thing I wanted to mention is I'm looking at the report. There are 1, 3, 4 courts that are over 100%. three of them are extremely small, probably the floor courts. And so really there's not any money to look at those courts that are over 100%.
All right. Thanks, Sherry. David?
Yes, thanks very much. So fortunately, I in working with the marvelous staff that are here in Orange, were able to run some of the numbers. And that has actually helped formulate kind of the position that I have. And I'll just give you a couple of observations. So of the, on a pro rata reduction, everybody maintains their spot relative to other courts. For the reduction to be applied in a 50-50 split,
and David, I'm sorry, when you say 50-50 split, for those that weren't at FMS, can you define that for us so we all know what you're talking about?
Right. 50% of the reduction be applied to those courts above the average, and 50% of the reduction be applied to everybody. Okay. For those courts that in the 50-50 scenario, 11 courts go from above the statewide average to below the statewide average, okay, 11. In a calculation that considers 30-70, 8 courts go from above the average to below the average. It basically moves everybody's position after all of these gains that have been achieved. Now, one other observation is if in a pro rata reduction, those courts, excluding some of the cluster one courts, basically all of them fall below 100%, which is essentially a position that was expressed just a moment ago, where it's very challenging to continue with the funding stream that perhaps brings people above the 100% or even more so with new monies coming in. So just on the natural, the pro rata reduction addresses a couple things. It equalizes, obviously, the reductions that we're talking about that everybody is going to have to experience some level of difficulty. It addresses the issue of courts that are well over 100% funding as well, let alone some of the arguments or positions that I just heard about equity for everybody. All of the courts are going to be affected in similar fashion by this particular reduction. So I again point out those variables. I know that we have to make a decision in advance of the council meeting for July. As I've looked at the data, I think the most equitable approach is to take the position of a pro rata reduction for everyone.
So, David, how do you think that Sherry's proposal of the limits or the governor, so to speak, so we apply the pro rata, as I understand the alternate suggestion, we apply the pro rata, but if any court above the line, no court above the line would take greater than a 1% cut beyond the pro rata, and no court below the line would gain more than 1% beyond the pro rata, and the remainder of the loss would then go to all those courts within the band. If I'm understanding Sherry's correctly, is that consistent with your concerns, Dave? Go ahead, Sherry.
Well, David's outline of the FMS split options we're not talking about today, so that's one of the reasons I had heartburn with those options. We're not talking about any of those split options. We're talking about pro rata or applying a band. And I do agree with Judge Barton. It's hard to understand without seeing it. It's easy for me because, first of all, I love numbers and play with this on the weekends, but we don't really know how it would work or even if there's enough money above the band or what the band should look like. So I found it interesting, David, you pointed out why I could not support the other options at FMS because the split options didn't feel right. But protecting people within a band, no more than pro rata does. But as Judge Barton points out, it's kind of tough to come today, outline a proposal, and not have any structure around it.
Judge Conklin, this is Chris Rule. Can I jump in here?
Absolutely, Chris. Go ahead.
So while we've been talking, my CFO, Colin Simpson, who, as you know, used to work at JGC and Budget Services, he's been crunching numbers like crazy here. And according to his preliminary calculations, if we create a 4% band.
So I'm sorry, but then 4% would be 4% above and 4% below, or 2% and 2%?
2% above and 2% below. If we create a 4% band, 2% above, 2% below, then those courts that are currently above that 2% would get up to, you would take an additional 1%, up to 1%. And those below would, you know, have their reduction reduced by up to 1%. And at that balance point, no court that is currently above the average would go below the average. That's a preliminary calculation he's done while we've been talking. He would need to spend more time on it to refine it. But that's the initial take, a 4% band.
Oh, magic, I said thank you. Okay, comments?
Ms. Conklin, can I get in line?
You bet, Mike. I think anybody that I missed who was before Mike Planet, Mike, go ahead.
So thanks, Judge Conklin. Yeah, I am on FMS, and I'm one of the ones that voted against the pro rata recommendation initially. And I continue to have that concern. I do agree with the kind of the sentiment that's contained in the letters in the public comment. And I'm concerned that the pro rata would just kind of perpetuate the underfunded courts versus the overfunded courts. And I support something that brings us closer to a statewide average as we move forward here. It's just as the underfunded courts are, I would argue, even more impacted in the current situation we're in because of our historical underfunded position. So I would favor something other than pro rata. I'm not sure what the right number is. I think that what Colin and Chris Rule have come up with sounds intriguing to me. If there's some way that we can maintain the balance of courts, barely over the line versus those courts under the line, I think it's a more fair and equitable approach. I think it's consistent with what we've been advocating on the funding methodology model for a number of years now, which I support, and I would like to and think that many of its principles apply when we're in a reduction scenario as well. So
great,
I would support another looking at some other options to get us to that point.
Great, Mike. Thanks. Judge Buckley?
A couple things. First of all, those of you who listened or participated in the meeting, there was a dynamic whereby we went back and forth between the $168 million and the $50 million. And I'm not advocating that we do it here. I think the approach we're doing right now is good for tickback. But the point being is that I think decisions on each were influenced by comments and the consensus as to both. The point primarily being is that there was definitely a belief that some of this money needs to follow along the line of equity. So that's number one. Number two, by our approach, with workload changes and so many other things changes, the system is set up that courts that are above the average can go below the average and vice versa. So it is inevitable that over time, courts can be put into a different position. We face, I think, a deadline, but we also face the need for some more information. So I would propose a motion that tries to outline what Sherry has articulated, that there would be a band within which there would be a pro rata cut, and that those courts above the band would be getting that 1% additional cut that would then go to the courts below, with those courts not getting the benefit of more than 1%. I will propose that we initially have it at 6%, in other words, 3% above, 3% below, but, and this I saw in one of the chat comments, that we have a period of a week, we'll have to ask staff as to what is a reasonable amount of time to show numbers, and that we have an email vote, or we could easily have another Blue Jeans meeting to decide whether that recommendation is the 6% is adjusted, either above, more or less. And then that'll allow us to, one, have a position that's concrete and going forward to tick back. But as far as a fairness and adjustment, we all agree that we can, in a week or within a week, adjust that to a different number if that's in fact the consensus that it should be more or less than 6%. Again, 6 meaning 3 above and 3 below. So I propose that as a motion.
So can I just ask for some clarification on that, Judge Buckley? And one would be, given that the 6% band, 3 above, 3 below, would another limitation be that no court that is within the band would then be allowed to fall outside the band? And how would we treat Cluster 1 courts? Because I think the FMS recommendation was Cluster 1 courts come back into this and are also part of this discussion.
Well, so the first one, but given my very first point, I don't think we can prevent some courts to go outside of the band above or below over time. So if in this reality that because of their workload and other items, including this adjustment, a court eventually does go above or below, I don't think we can prevent that. If in fact the consensus of the group is to have an amendment that one cannot, I'd be very open to that, but I'm just responding to your question. And candidly, we're all over the place with the lower courts. If we could just that whatever the percentage is within the band as to a cut, that would be the maximum of what those, I think we called even the smaller courts or cluster one courts, would not get any more than that percentage of a cut. I'm giving you an answer. I'm open to any other thoughts.
Thank you.
Judge Franklin.
Who is that? Kim, go ahead.
Yeah, so I like the idea of getting more information, and I would just like to propose, I don't want to speak for JCC staff, but if they're going to develop a band concept proposal, they could certainly give us options 1, 2, and 3 with a band at 4%, a band at 6%, and a band at 8%, just so we can see what those differences are. I don't think that that's a lot of additional work for JCC staff, although feel free, all of you guys, to pipe in and tell me if I'm all wet. But I believe that it would get, you know, I don't think we want to go have another Blue Jeans meeting or an email vote on a 6% proposal and then say, well, we think the band should be something else and have to go back and do it again. So perhaps a range of options would be the way to go for that meeting. And as for the cluster one courts, I think they do have to share in the, you know, in the reduction scenarios as FMS rightly determined what kind of reduction they experience. You know, perhaps they're included in the same reduction as the courts that are within the band are going to get. That's one option. But I'm open to any options there. And I am fine with capping the percentage reduction that the courts over and over the band get, if that's the will of the group. But I think we should first see what the numbers look like, because I think it's hard to conceptualize all of this without having the spreadsheets in front of us.
Okay, so again, I'm just trying to keep us all focused. And as I understand now, and Judge Buckley, did you use the word motion?
I did use the word motion.
So as I understand it now, and with Kim Turner's friendly amendment, it would be to refer this back to Budget Services to develop 3 scenarios, a referred to as bands, and that would be a 4% band, 2 above, 2 below, a 6% band, 3, 3, and an 8% band, 4, and 4. Additionally, those courts that then, so it would be a pro rata distribution within each of those bands. Any court above that band would also then be subject to an additional 1% reduction of their allocation. That reduction would then be used for those courts below the band to reduce their reduction by 1%.
May I make a friendly amendment there?
Of course.
So like all new money allocations, that should be applied based on the same principles and the same methodology we've always used, which is based on proximity from the line and workload. So I have no objection to the 1% on the top, but when you're applying it, I would recommend that we use the same methodology that we have always used, which has some factors related to proximity and so forth. And that would be my suggested change.
Sherry's asked for a friendly amendment from Judge Buckley.
This is Chris Rowe. Can I make sure I understand that? Does that mean then that, for example, those above the band would take up to a maximum 1%, but it would be somewhere in that 1% based on those other factors?
No, they take an additional 1% cut.
Yeah, whatever the percentage of the band's cut, those above the band would not have that X percent plus one as to their cut.
It was, remember, we're talking about an 8% cut here overall.
But in allocating the reduction to those under the band, we would use the same methodology we have been using on allocating new money, which provides more money the farther you are away, your proximity from the lower level of the band. They already have the algorithm, and I think we should try to stay as principled with what we've done in the past, because it's easy for us to then say, you know, we followed the same in providing this to those under the band.
Judge Conklin, this is Rebecca.
Go ahead, Rebecca.
Just a couple things. I know I'm catching up here on the conversation, but just to get in line here. I do want to reiterate that I think that the funding methodology subcommittee was pretty united on the fact that all the courts should participate in some kind of cut. So in regards to the cluster one conversation, and anybody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I do think that that was an overarching theme at that meeting. The second comment that I would have would be, there is a in the actual policy that we have detailed out in the allocations and fiscal years where there's no new money, there is a under number four, there is a maximum of 1% change in the adjustment of the courts above the band when they are being adjusted down. And so if we are considering some of the existing language in our policies, then I would suggest that perhaps, and I don't know if we want to consider this a friendly amendment, or I'll let the folks that made the motions consider this, but perhaps we should have staff consider all of the language in the existing detailed approaches to provide us scenarios that are consistent with the language that we have in both the new money and the no new money year, so that we're as close to the existing approach as possible. Does that make sense? Did that come out right? And so perhaps we broaden the request from staff to review the language and provide us examples that are aligned with the language, I guess is a better way to say that. And then my third comment would be that wherever we wind up, you know, we have, one of the reasons we have moved away from preparing numbers when we talk about our approaches is because we are trying to focus on a policy approach. And when we do prepare numbers, it is with the intent to make sure that we are not inadvertently distressing a court because we didn't consider some factor. And I do think that it is important that we take a look to make sure that we are consistent across the board with how we wind up, because we have worked really, really hard in this branch to come to a point where we have one voice. And I think it's been noticed. And I think that before this COVID situation, you know, it was recognized with some of our efforts in advocacy. And so I think it's important that we land in a place that while we're all unhappy with the cuts, that we are not inadvertently putting one court in a position that separates or divides us from the rest of the group. And so that would be my comments. Thank you.
Thanks, Rebecca.
Judge Conklin, can I add one thing?
Oh, I'm sorry. So go ahead, Judge.
David, and then David. Who was after David? Judge Buckley?
Yes, sir.
So let's go to David and then Judge Buckley. David?
Yeah, so one of the points that I was going to bring up was actually what just Rebecca just did, and that is remembering some of the principles that we consider going forward, and over and above the cap of a reduction to a court that's over a particular spot, limiting it to 1%, but also the consideration that we were very mindful that it's very hard for a court to adjust to a significant reduction, and that's one of the reasons why we kind of created this glide path, where for two flat funding years, that would be the trigger of some reductions, and being mindful that we're going to be making some pretty significant decisions coming from FMS and certainly to TICBAC, that it's important for us to take a look at those numbers. I've seen them. They are, I'll say it, they're horrific. If in fact the distribution of the reduction has to be applied to a greater degree to some of the courts. And I think we need to see what those numbers are, and I think it will influence, hopefully, this body to do what is appropriate for ourselves and our brethren.
All right, I'll move to Dr. Buckley, and I don't mean to make light of this, but we should move away from the term glide path to nosedive, because that's, I think, really what we're trying to level off as best we can. But with that, Judge Buckley, go ahead.
I responded to a couple of the good thoughts by Rebecca and David. I think we are putting a cap by having that 1% max therefore, and of course if there's just something that just jumps out that's extremely unfair, there's always a chance for the council can, let alone our recommendation can change. To one of Kim's points, and taking Rebecca's concern that people start adjusting their vote or thinking about individual courts, it's why we throw out maybe that the presumption is 6%, but that we are able and willing to adjust either 8% or 4% if there is a glaring unfairness or whatever. But that way, a presumptive number, you're really going to be looking at something that is a glaring problem rather than some of the members looking at slight numbers that might benefit or not benefit. So that's the thinking. But I'm open to that friendly amendment if the group's consensus is that we just want to have a motion that is going to agree to the band approach and make a decision as to the percentage. But right now the motion would be a presumption of 6%, but ask for 4 and 8% to make a necessary adjustment for fairness.
So let me make sure I can encapsulate that, and then we'll continue to move the discussion. So we'll ask Budget Services to prepare a presumed 6%, 3% above, 3% below, as well, and that's the presumptive, and then we'd also ask them to prepare a 4%, 2 and 2, and an 8%, 4 and 4. Additionally, the Cluster 1 courts would be included within this redistribution, or reallocation, pardon me. Additionally, whether it be 6 presumptive or 4 or 8, that those courts above, the pro rata would be within the band. Any court above would then suffer, pardon me, would then be asked to take an additional 1% cut. Any court below the band would then be allowed to take an additional minus minus. In other words, their cut would be reduced by 1%.
No, I would encourage us to use the methodology we use when we allocate new money to apply the reduction. When we apply the money to reduce the reduction below the band, which takes into account proximity from the band. So people, counties furthest away from the bottom of the band, we already have that algorithm. I would use the same principles to apply the money collected for the 1% to those below the band with the same methodology we use for new money.
Is that consistent with your proposal, Judge Buckley?
It is. And one slight added clarification is that the Cluster 1 courts would be getting the same percentage cut that those within the band will be getting.
Less the floor courts, right? Less the two courts that have floor funding?
Right. Correct.
Yeah, the floor courts are excluded from this entire discussion. The two floor courts, which have the minimum level of, I think it's $800,000, $850,000.
And one other comment to address, I think, Judge Barton's good point about